Chapter 1. It's been a long time. Like Beatles and Hella. It's Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and I actually just gave a few haircuts to a friend of mine, Oscar, and another friend of mine, Adam. And it's been a long time since I've seen either one of them. And, this whole break, I've tried to focus, which is kind of ironic, on embracing vacation and time off and not working and everything and just enjoying being purely without having to feel like I need to do something productive or be working towards some sort of goal, so on and so forth. And I find that that's really, really hard for me to take time to slow down and to just, you know, to be able to sit around and like watch a movie or watch TV or just, I don't know, just being sedentary, you know. I'm not very good at that. When I do it, I get anxious. Like, I feel like it's sort of a inverse correlation. It's the more I am, you know, immobile, the faster my mind works. And then the more I'm mobile, you know, the more my mind is, like, calm. And, I've been struggling with that this whole break, which is weird because I feel like the fact that it is a struggle means that I can't really consciously do anything to overcome it. You know, it's kind of, I'm at the mercy of what I think about. And if I'm thinking the whole time about, you know, enjoying my time, then likelihood is I'm not going to enjoy it as much as if I just enjoyed it. So it's been a good break. I've enjoyed it more so than breaks in the past, I suppose, but I have been struggling with that feeling of having to force myself to slow down. Like, I wanted to do an episode of Molt for today, to release it today, which today's Friday, but I just I felt like it was a bad idea to try to fit in doing a podcast in the week that I was supposed to be taking a break, because earlier in the week I had done some homework that I didn't really need to do, but I just wanted to have things to do. Like, this whole week I've had off from school, and I've had assignments that I could do for, you know, the coming up week, which will be, I guess, like the first week of December. And I just looked forward to doing them, knowing that I would have, like, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off from school. I just looked forward to being able to do some work that would actually be for school, but then having the majority of the day be, like, free time for music or biking or playing with friends or whatever. And that worked out pretty well, but I came home for Thanksgiving as well to my house, my parents' house. And, you know, here, it's like I don't have my things that I usually would use to like, occupy my time. Like, I didn't bring my bike on purpose so that I could give my legs time to rest. And I usually don't bring my computer because I don't want to be tempted to, like, get lost in doing that rather than spending time with my family or whatever. And I also have all my music equipment back in Atlanta, so I wasn't able to play music. So, you know, while I've been here, I've taken a few walks with my dog like I used to, which have been nice. Although, I feel like since it's been so long since I've taken those walks, the potency is less, you know. The tolerance that I found with walking was kind of like, the more I walked, the more calming and soothing it was. And seeing as it's been so long, I found that the effects yesterday, I went for about an hour and a half walk, I felt like it wasn't as capturing an experience as it used to be. I remember that I would used to be able to almost get away from anything I was thinking about as long as I had enough time to walk. But then again, I don't know. I used to talk to myself a lot while I would walk, and I didn't talk to myself much this past walk. I think I was more observing what was going on around me. And so, I don't know. I felt kind of anxious this whole week, and talked to my girlfriend about that yesterday. Yesterday, before I saw her, was sort of a lonely day. I felt like I didn't really have anybody, and it was kind of a weird feeling because it was Thanksgiving, and it was sort of a hollow feeling, I guess, just like emptiness, you know. I went through my whole phone, all the numbers that I have, and just tried to think who I would like to call, who I would like to be with on Thanksgiving, and I felt like I would be a burden, my presence would be a burden upon anyone who I called, and I also didn't find anyone throughout my list who I felt like would be the exception to that, you know. So I spent a lot of time alone, I guess, this break. Although, I've been with my girlfriend a lot, which I really like that. But yeah, this week is, it's been nice, but I'm just really, really bad at relaxing. Unless I feel like I deserve it. I think my relaxation periods cannot be more than perhaps a day. So a whole week is a struggle. And I'm happy to be recording this right now in my parents' house, in the breakfast table, looking out on the backyard, sort of an overcast, kind of chilly, windy kind of day. It's nice that the whole week has kind of been like that, a little overcast, a little encouraging of just, you know, taking time to slow down. The weather has very much so mirrored how I feel a vacation should be. You know, it shouldn't be a time where you feel productive. It should be a time where you're able to sort of reflect on what maybe you've done and be satisfied in that, and, you know, just stop and refresh. But I don't know, I just, that to me is very difficult. And I guess that's a good way to start the podcast, because that sort of explains why there wasn't one over Thanksgiving, kind of explains what I was doing and how I was feeling during this break since the last show, episode 3, kind of how I felt. I guess a quick recap of my week would be Friday, which was, I guess, the first official day of Thanksgiving break for me. I ended up biking back to Lilburn, and which is where my parents live, and from there just stayed the night and biked back to Atlanta the next day and spent some time with friends. That was nice. And Sunday, I guess, I went to a Thanksgiving meal that was for my uncle's partner's family, which was interesting. Monday, I tried to focus on finishing my homework assignments so that I would be done for the week so I could really enjoy it. Tuesday, my girlfriend came down, which was great. Really, really nice to see her. I guess now more than ever. And got to spend time with her. And then Wednesday, got to spend time with her. Thursday, the same story. And tonight, Friday night, we're going to the mountains. My parents have a house up in North Georgia, and we'll get to spend time together again, which that's like really, really good time to spend with her. I love doing that. She goes to Berry College, and I'm at Georgia State, so we have about, I don't know, 100 miles or so in between us, so any time that we get together is really, really precious time, and I really, really like to milk it for all it's worth. And so times like this, breaks and stuff, I do look forward to spending time with her, because it usually is surefire time that we get together. In our relationship, I'll have to talk about that sometime, because it's gone through a lot distance-wise. Certainly bears, distance definitely bears a huge part of our relationship's evolution and like state that it's in now, which is good. But I would need to devote a lot more time and thought to a clip like that to really delve into our relationship. But that's sort of where I'm at right now. You know, that kind of that leaves me here. It's Friday, and just wanted to start the podcast, drink some coffee, kind of just, you know, shake my mind out. You know, it's like a rug, my mind. It gets dust and it gets rocks and it gets all these particulates all over it. And you know, if you don't shake it out periodically, then it gets really, really nasty, and it needs to be shaked and shook. So I think that's where I'm gonna leave you. It's a 10-minute clip to start the show back up. Some of the things I'm gonna do in this episode, definitely have another Naveed clip that I'd like to put in here. I hope he had a good Thanksgiving. I want to use a song suggested by my friend Alex. This show actually will have a lot to do with things that he suggested to me recently. And so this song that I'm going to play is a song by a man, I believe his name is Eric Seti, French man. And I'd like to read some haikus that I wrote over the song, because the song is really, really beautiful. And I'll have to talk about that when it comes up as well. And I hope that my poems wouldn't be a degradation of the song itself, but I don't think they would, because I can definitely read them in the same spirit that the song invokes. So that's another thing I'd like to do, and you know, that's a good start for the show. So I'll talk to you later. For now, this is KP signing off. Peace. Chapter 2, The Trench Party Show at Noni's. There was a show at Noni's Bar on Monday that I was really excited about. That was the day that I had tried to do a lot of my homework so that I could have this whole week to just relax. And so I thought I would spend the majority of my morning and my afternoon doing my work so that I could really reward myself by going to the show later that night. And so I did that, and I finished my work at about 2 o'clock or so, having gone to this coffee place that I like called Octane, sort of in the west side of Atlanta, where I met this guy Angel, who I seem to meet every single time I go to this coffee place, and caught up with him. It was nice. It was like a good way to start the morning, kind of being able to talk to him, see what was going on in his life, and then start up my work. It was kind of nice. It was nicer than just jumping straight into work, which can sometimes be you know, a slow-going process. You know, you have to, if you don't kickstart your mind, it's like warming up for an exercise, you know. It's better to do a few stretches to get your muscles warm than jump straight onto a bike or straight into running or something. And so that's kind of, it was nice to talk to him because I was able to limber up my mind, and then I wrote my paper, 5-page paper, for my psychology class in a little less than 2 hours, which was nice. So I went to the show that night, and I was pretty excited about it, and I thought it would be cool to see some people who I hadn't seen for a while and, you know, talk and joke and just have some fun. And to a large degree, I did that. I mean, it was a couple hours before actually going to the show, and I was hanging out with my friends who were going to be playing it, and that was cool. I enjoyed that a lot. I don't know, when I got there to the actual venue where the show was going to happen, I just felt like a severe disconnect from everyone who was there. It was kind of, I don't know, I just felt like it was very, I got bored. I just felt very bored for some reason. When I first got to the show, I noticed that there was this, pretty tall, abandoned, like, old building adjacent to where the venue was, and I really, really wanted to climb it. And, so I did. I went, and I saw how I could get on top to the very highest point, which I guess the building was about 2 stories. And I had to kind of scramble up the side of it, which was really, really exhilarating and really awesome. Cut my fingers a little bit, but blood is the proof of purchase of adventure, and got to the top, and a pretty cool view on looking into the actual building. It was weird. It had sort of caved in, and there was a bunch of debris everywhere. The roof had kind of collapsed and was dilapidated and everything. It was very weird to see. And I felt like it was like a very profound experience to be there. Like, I felt very, you know, estranged from the people I was with, and just like, I felt like I was just on a different, I was thinking, I was not satisfied with what was going on with the people I was with, and so I tried to escape, and I did, but it left me feeling weird. Felt kind of like the universe, similar kind of like enveloping of the universe that I felt maybe when I had to do those mercy killings with the bird and with the mouse. You know, it just kind of felt like everything was a vacuum, and I was aware of it and enveloped by it. So I climbed the building a lot. I did it maybe 3 or 4 times. Just whenever I would get really, really bored, I would just go and do that. And then one of the guys who was playing that night, he came out, and he said that he was about to go back to his house, which is where we had all been previously, where I was actually, you know, enjoying, I guess, just relaxing. And he said that he had to go back and pick up some microphone stands, and I begged him to let me do it on my bike, and he said that he would love for me to. So I got to leave the venue and bike back to their house, and then bike back to the venue with 2 microphone stands in my arms, which they're about 3 or 4 feet long. Probably one of them was about maybe 10 or 15 pounds. The other one was probably about 5. So very cumbersome, very awkward, but a good challenge. And I knew I could do it, so it wasn't a big deal. And it was a nice little refresher to leave and then come back. But I don't know, it kind of made me more... I wanted to do more stuff like that. After I got the opportunity to go back to their house, I was just like definitely unsatisfied with just kind of standing around. I didn't want to drink, certainly didn't want to smoke cigarettes, and I just felt like that was sort of a divide that was between me and the majority of the people there. I can sometimes be really sensitive about that kind of thing, like substances and stuff. And I guess that was just one of those times where I felt like it was an alienating factor rather than a something shared, something in common. And the whole thing kind of culminated with me leaving. Obviously, it's sort of the most basic and obvious response to that feeling, just not being there anymore, escaping from it. But it was weird. I felt like I was in a very like hypersensitive mood, and I didn't want to like leave and go by the building and have to endure saying goodbye to everyone and explaining that I just wasn't feeling it. I felt for some reason that was something to be avoided. And so I tried to get out as discreetly and as unnoticed as possible, which was weird because I thought I could just simply walk out the back and then grab my bike and just bike away in the opposite direction of the actual venue. But I found that the whole venue was enclosed in like about a 8-foot tall fence with barbed wire, and so there was a unique challenge trying to leave. I had my bike, and had I not had my bike, I would have simply just hopped the fence. But with my bike, it was very weird. I walked around the entire perimeter to see if there was any easy way to get out. I found that there wasn't. And then I walked back to what I thought would be the best place to climb, and with my bike, that is, and got to the top, tried to figure out how I would maneuver like the 1-foot expanse of barbed wire, expanding vertically up, and realized that I could hang my handlebar of my bike. I could push it through the lattice work of the fence, and that it would stay stationary while I was able to climb over the barbed wire and the fence, and then climb my way down, and then retrieve my bike, and then bike away. And that's what I did. It was a very involved process, all just to, avoid the social awkwardity that I guess I felt like I would have to inevitably encounter if I were just to simply walk out the front. Because, you know, it was nothing against anyone there. I wasn't like, it wasn't a judgment thing. I wasn't feeling superior or anything. I just felt like I wanted to, you know, quietly step out. And that was like the method that I found to do that. It's very weird and very very fun. I enjoyed it. It was exactly the way I would want to have something like that happen, like a very unique and special sort of exit. But that, you know, I left after that, went back home, felt much more happy about being home. And this is, I guess, again, Monday night. And so I just kind of piddled around, did some stuff, kind of regained my sense of comfort being back at my house, somewhere familiar. It was a weird experience overall. I'm sort of infamous with myself to not enjoy concerts or shows or anything like that. And this just was like, this was no different than what would be expected, I suppose. Just didn't enjoy it for some reason. Just didn't feel the connection. Didn't feel good about it. Just had to go. Just had to leave. So I did. And that was the Noni's experience. As strange as it was wonderful, I suppose. And that was my Monday night.
Thank you.
Chapter 3, David Foster Wallace, the first of Alex's suggestions. Recently, my friend Alex, who I mentioned earlier in the show, he suggested that because of the first show that I made where I talked about Dave Eggers, or I guess that was actually back on I'm Incredulous, he said that there was a guy named David Foster Wallace who had been interviewed on the Charlie Rose show, and that I should really, really check it out because it was like a very, very intensely intelligent interview, and he thought that I would really enjoy it, especially since I guess he had realized through that episode that I was really into interviews. And so I checked it out, not really knowing anything about David Foster Wallace, and without much expectation. And I was very, very impressed by it. David Foster Wallace is a modern author in America who, I guess, notably wrote the book Infinite Jest, which is a book I haven't read. I haven't read any of his books, actually, having only recently come to know about him whatsoever. But this interview, it was very, very interesting. David Foster Wallace has a very unique, I guess, style in terms of like clothing and hair. He was sort of dressed in, I think, a button-down shirt and long hair with like a white bandana with that paisley pattern that bandanas have. It was a very weird combination. Very, it looked completely, you know, original and unique. Like, whatever the reason was that he wore the things that he did the way he did, seemed, just by the way they looked, to be completely unique to him as a person. And so I was intrigued just by that. You know, when you go to YouTube and you see the still frame of the video you're about to watch, this interview with Charlie Rose and David Foster Wallace had David Foster Wallace in the frame, and it had a picture of him with just this white bandana in his face, and you could tell he had long hair and he had glasses. And so I was definitely intrigued just from the outset. And I listened to him and Charlie, and was just sort of, man, definitely captivated and amazed at the depth that David Foster Wallace was able to articulate. Because I oftentimes think that I'm some sort of like mutant creature who's got these weird metaphorical symbols going through my head all the time that I try to use to discern reality, and end up becoming very analytical because of it, and very, I guess, dependent upon words to describe feelings. And in listening to David Foster Wallace, I realized that there is a heightened level of this experience and this state of mind that I have not even come to the threshold of experiencing. Because the level of detail and the level of quick, witty thought that he had was just, like, incredible. I just could not believe to what degree he could really describe, you know, the way he felt. And I always think it's very telling of a person's intelligence when they're able to refer to authors, like authors with specific themes. Like, I think that once in the interview he referred to something that he felt as very, you know, I don't remember what he said, but just for example, if someone was talking about themselves and just like referred to something in their own life as like Dickensian, referring to like Charles Dickens or something, you know, to be able to encompass an entire author's work and make it into, I guess, an adjective or something. To me, that's just very, I respond to that with interpreting that person as being very intelligent and very thoughtful. And so I don't really even remember the content specifically of the interview, but it was interesting to note while I watched it that David Foster Wallace, for all his genius, is extremely self-deprecating. And I've listened to several interviews since listening to the first one with Charlie Rose. And in every single one, he's very, very like tentatively apologetic at the end of the interview. Or at the end of every question, like he will elaborately expound upon the interviewer's question, and he will give very, very like very well integrated, however long and seemingly man, is tangential? No, that's not a word. His explanations are very, very broad and very, very concise at the same time. He has very good control over what he wants to say, and he's able to say a lot about a little, I guess. And but he always comes back to like the original question and like sort of says that he doesn't really know if what he says has made sense, and if the person wants to edit out what he said because he was rambling, then they probably should do that, or something like he made a lot of apologies for sounding to himself, I guess, conceited and pretentious, which is, it's just strange to see that, because he is a man of such definitely, you know, acclaimed genius and ability, and it seemed like he had a problem accepting that and embracing it and being comfortable with it and using the perception of intelligence to his benefit, I suppose. It sort of seemed like it was more of a crutch than it was an asset, something that he should be ashamed of. It seemed to me that like his real problem was that he maybe constantly feels and felt misunderstood, like, because of the, I mean, if you are touted to be a genius and your works are supposedly, I don't know, if you're gifted with conveying ideas and thoughts and feelings through writing to a mass audience and having your thoughts and feelings be regarded as very, very profound and very, very intellectually based and everything, I suppose it would be easy for it to be hard to find someone who would really understand you. Because if your mind is at such a caliber and such a degree of intelligence, then obviously that makes you to a degree abnormal. And so if you're not able to communicate often and meaningfully with others, if it oftentimes seems that you're expressing, you know, ideas of greatness to no avail, to no effect, then I could see how that would very easily make you feel alienated and constantly misunderstood and lonely. And you know, if you weren't able to value the gift that you had and the gift that you have, you know, if you feel like that gift is more of an impediment, which perhaps what he may have felt, and sort of how I perceive him in these interviews, I feel like he's apologetic about the way he is. It could be destructive, and I learned shortly after watching a few interviews of David Foster Wallace that he actually had committed suicide. And to me, on a tragic level, like I wasn't surprised to hear that, because, you know, he did not seem as though he had embraced himself in a way that would make him be able to survive the constant feeling of disconnect that he would have to invariably be experiencing with people. Because it's simple, really. If you are so intelligent, and if you are so gifted in expression, and he is. I listened to an excerpt of him reading from one of his books, and it was one of the first times in a long time that I've listened to something, an interview, or in this case a book reading, where the majority of the words he used to describe his situations, I did not understand what he was talking about. The words escaped me. His vocabulary is so expansive that he can describe feelings that have like a very, very severe nuance with words that are very, you know, obscure themselves. And so, you know, if you're working in a framework of your reality wherein you think in terms of words that are not commonly used or heard, then it would be hard to connect with people. And I feel like that, to me, I really find these interviews and everything David Foster Wallace I guess I haven't read his books, but everything that has involved David Foster Wallace that I've watched on the internet, to me, are very, very, very important and, you know, tantalizing to my mind, because I realize that when it comes to gifts and abilities and everything, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It can be. Because if you have something that distinguishes you so, so much from others, then almost by definition, it will be hard to meaningfully connect with others, because you just have such a rare ability on such a rare field of existence, you know. It's a matter of how you interpret that reality as to whether or not it's something that you can grow with and from, or something that will stifle you and ultimately, in his case, you know, take your life. Which I haven't really done much, I guess, research into why he did commit suicide, but I feel like the pain and the anguish, if you really pay attention to these interviews, is very, very apparent, and it's inescapable. And his confidence in himself is like so fragile. I mean, I think in writing his books, he was able to convey what he thought without feeling like, without worrying perhaps about expressing himself to a degree where he was not expressing himself. He had the ability while writing to express who he was and not worry about making sure he was intelligible. And I suppose, you know, those would be sort of cathartic releases. But if the balance is shifted and he feels like he cannot connect, then, you know, that's just a huge problem. And this is just my, you know, analytical, subjective, most likely wrong interpretation of him as a person based on a few interviews that I've watched. But to me, I can't get over the fact that it's so ever-present in every single one. So I would encourage anyone to check out David Foster Wallace and see for yourself what you think about him as a person, and whether or not you even see the same thing that I do. I find that I don't oftentimes accept people at face value. I try to see what their inner workings and their, I guess, undertones are. And for me, it was just written all over his face, my analysis of how and who he is as a person. So I'd like to thank Alex for that that little suggestion to check him out. And I forward it to you, the listener. Chapter 4, more from the Naveed interview. So let's just jump straight into this. What is your name?
Hi there, I'm Naveed. Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So the reason I have you here is because I feel like we've had some good conversations in the recent past, and I've been trying to hope that I can get you comfortable enough to kind of rehash some of those ideas and conversations that we've had, and although we're having some severe technical difficulties that you can certainly attest to, I think that we can still make the most of this gathering that we have together. So, I guess, how are you doing, Naveed?
Well, besides the fact that I know I'm going to sound like a 5-year-old girl when this is heard, I think I'm doing pretty all right. My test today didn't go all that well, but, well, math can burn in hell, so whatever. Yeah, math can burn in hell, that's all I'm going to say. So, yeah, besides that, it's a pretty normal day, feeling pretty good, gonna be 19 tomorrow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be an old man. It's great. It's terrific. Yeah, I mean, it's all good. Just, you know, taking things day at a time. Just trying to learn whatever I can. And, you know, it's just business as usual, I guess.
You guys going to do anything, like your family, for your birthday? Like, is there like a specific celebration or a place that you guys will go or things that you will eat? Like, I assume you're going home. You go home every Friday, right? I think is what you told me.
Yeah, yeah. I try to make sure I go home every weekend. You know, I definitely couldn't stay, you know, here all long, you know, because I would miss family and, you know, my friends that I've left over there. And, you know, because it's kind of hard to keep connections with them nowadays because they're also, you know, busy with their own things. And, you know, things are, life moves fast, you know. So it's hard, gets harder and harder every day to keep connections and to keep things the way they used to be in a way. And, well, as far as what I'm going to do this weekend, well, over the holidays, I'm probably going to definitely be eating a lot. I've already told my mom that we're definitely going to that Thai restaurant, and we're gonna make this pretty fun. I mean, I don't know about vacation wise. I mean, because that's pretty hard with because my dad's busy with the gas station. When you have a convenience store and only an employee or two, and not really sure you want to leave the store with them, it's usually kind of hard, you know. Because you could leave it to be run that way, but then when it comes to trusting with your money, you know, like, because you got to make deposits, get the money out of there, because these days you really can't leave your money in a convenience store, because I mean there have been several robberies recently in that area. Actually, in fact, mine was robbed I think it's been a few months, I think, pretty bad, basically cleaned out, and the guys were pretty professional and stuff, but you know, whatever. So vacations are hard, basically, and so I don't know exactly, but I mean, I'm definitely going to be eating. I'm going to gain about 10 pounds, for sure. I mean, fat enough as it is, but whatever. I'll deal with it when it comes. So, yeah, I guess that's...
Yeah, well, I think one of the good things about we're having to pass the microphone back and forth, I can actually edit out the pass, so that little bit of dead silence can be completely eviscerated. So this is going to sound very natural, and I'm sure anyone listening to it, by the time it's edited, will not be able to notice the slight dip, or not even dip, but the pauses will be gone. And so you've told me several times you're an Ismaili Muslim, and we've actually had the conversation now that it's Ismaili, not Ismaili, and that's been my mistake for many years now, rectified. But so would you say that it's perhaps... part of being an Ismaili Muslim that allows you to have that sort of an attitude with, I guess, a more Western holiday? Because, if you, in the media obviously portrays, you know, Muslim extremists as rejecting all of Western culture in any sort of way. And you've told me about how, Ismaili Muslims, when they were in the satellite countries of Russia, like, they actually assimilated, and they actually were a very, like, big asset after the Soviet Union collapsed and everything. And is that where you think you get the more tolerant attitude, or is it a misconception on my part that it's like an all-or-nothing thing for people who are Muslim, or, I guess, any other kind of ethnicity or faith or whatever? Like, and maybe in your answer, talk a little bit about what it is to be an Ismaili Muslim, because it is, you know, it's a very... little known sect, I think, by especially non-Muslims and Americans in general. I've never found too many people to be knowledgeable about it. But then again, maybe it's just exposure, you know, where I'm from, what I've seen.
Well, very loaded question right there. Yeah. But, when you said about the extremists, well, yes, I mean, the extremists do seem to reject mostly everything. But yes, when it comes to the tolerant, you know, thing about, you know, the tolerance, the pluralism, it very much is very fundamental to the Ismaili sect, you know, because, I mean, it's a thing about practicality in many ways. I mean, yes, of course, we have our things, you know, there's a God and all that. So, I mean, with things like that, naturally, you know, there's only there is obviously, for some people, would call it a suspension of disbelief in a way. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say so. You know, for someone who is there's not really a right word, I guess, but I mean, for someone, because I don't really want to say a real believer in God, but I mean, if you've experienced it, then you know. It doesn't really matter whether science ever gets to it, whether they ever figure it out, whether they maybe find some kind of God particle, you know, like the whole, like the angels and demons thing and all that. You know, it may never happen, but, you know, but the people who know, they know. We already know. You know, I mean, it's just, that thing doesn't really, you know, so in that way, I mean, it's about practicality for the most part. It's about, you know, it doesn't, the outer trappings of things don't matter. It's all about what lies underneath. Everything else is mostly irrelevant. It's not important to, I mean, you know, traditions and, you know, those things are important and are respected. You know, we, you know, for people who are maybe, you know, who have longstanding traditions. I mean, we have our own longstanding traditions. We still celebrate holidays that, you know, like Eid and other days that have, you know, been there forever. But, you know, the nature of celebrating them and things has changed, you know, based on time, you know, in one way. And also where the community is going, where they are, because obviously people have disseminated and, you know, they've gone everywhere. And so now it's, you know, it's not a localized thing. You know, we are a small community, but it's surprising how many places we are, actually. I mean, it's definitely not an isolated, you know, sect in the least.
Chapter 5, Eric Satie and Conclusions. The time has come to wrap up this cast. It's sort of, I don't know, it's felt kind of like an anchor, knowing that I have this episode that hasn't been finished and hasn't been posted yet. You know, I probably could have made an episode over Thanksgiving, but I think it's okay that I didn't. I think it was good to, you know, make myself relax. And today is Tuesday. Tuesday, the last day of November, and we've had some pretty bad weather these past 2 days. Monday and Tuesday both have been pretty rainy and pretty cold. I kept wishing that I had, like, this ability to have a chorus of, you know, sympathetic, a chorus of sympathetic sympathizers? I don't know. Just like, you know, when you're by yourself and you experience an intense emotion and you say something out loud, even though you're by yourself, you know, that's a time when you would like to have a chorus of sympathizers echoing whatever sentiment you had. Oh, a sentimental sympathizer. That's it. That's a cool thing to say. That's fun. Because it's been pretty cold here, pretty wet, and I've definitely could have used a few people to join in with me to comment on the weather. When it rains like it has been these past 2 days, I still bike. I think it's good for me. And I was biking today and thinking about why I do it, especially because my girlfriend said something to me recently. She said that I put myself through a lot of things, like purposefully make myself uncomfortable for no real reason, and she didn't mean it in any sort of bad way, but it made me think a lot, you know, because I do challenge myself a lot and I like to put myself in uncomfortable situations. And so I was thinking today while I was biking from school back towards my house, I was thinking, why do I do this? And somehow I started thinking about how I like to talk to homeless people around the area and really give them an ear that they can, give them an ear so I can listen to what they have to say. Because sometimes I just get this feeling that homeless people just need one person to validate their existence. And then, I don't know, maybe the rest of their day will be all right. And so I think the fact that I do that, the fact that I have sympathy for homeless people, I think that might be largely due to the fact that I try to put myself in very uncomfortable situations voluntarily. So to imagine someone who involuntarily, involuntarily has to exist in a situation that is uncomfortable and with no end in sight. You know, I have sympathy for that. I feel like, you know, I can still see the humanity in these people. And that's the thing, too, really. I mean, I know that even though I'm uncomfortable a lot of the time, be it from the cold or from the wet, in seasons like winter and all, I know that there's always an end in sight. I know that it's only a matter of time before I am in a house and I can change clothes and everything. So I feel like it's a privilege to be able to be that uncomfortable, which is funny to say. And so that was one thing that happened today, one little nugget of thought. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and I think finish this podcast out. I'm only going to have, I guess, two songs in the whole thing, and those will probably take up the rest of the time. One of them that you will have heard before this was Boris off his album Pink, and the song is actually a Japanese title in the kanji I can't read, but it's a pretty long song, and I'm going to finish this whole podcast out with that same Eric Seti song that Alex had suggested to me, but I'm actually not going to read my haikus over it. I think that's kind of lame now that I've had time to think about it. And yeah, that's about it. I just want to kind of get this podcast out and start on the next one, and hope that it has a little bit more of a flow. You know, it's weird to span one podcast over 2 weeks, so this one feels a little disjointed, so I'll be happy to get it out and then move on. So I hope you enjoyed listening. It helped me a lot last Friday to express how I felt about everything. I guess I'll see you next week. And until then, molt, shed, grow, learn, all those things. And treat yourself well.